studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Wednesday, it's Oregon Update. My name is Robin with Cliff on one end of the table and Pastor Bradley on the other. How you doing, guys?
I'm doing fantastic, and it's not wet here.
Great. I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
Yes, Cliff is broadcasting in our remote studios in Cottage Grove. But it's been,
I was going to say it wasn't wet at the other end of the table. Oh, well.
That too. I hope it's not wet at the other end of the table.
No, actually, it's a little cloudy, but other than that, we're doing great.
At the other end of the table?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, we've had trouble with the humidity system here in the building.
It's a long table.
It is a long table.
What, 17 miles, something?
Very hard to keep clean. Anyways, good morning, folks. It's Wednesday. It's a crazy day. It's a conspiracy theory Wednesday, a little special thing we want to do because there's a lot of conspiracies we could talk about. Unfortunately, some of it is true, especially when it relates to our government, which they keep saying, well, the government is us. Thanks. Anyways, if you have a conspiracy theory or would like to call in to the show, please do so. 646-721-9887. The chat room is open, www.blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. And you can try our other chat room at krbnradio.com. It requires no registration. Just make up a name and say hi. And, of course, you can also reach us by Facebook, Twitter, and email, talk@krbnradio.com. And I think I got all that out of the way.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything?
You do well at this.
I did forget about iTunes, though. You can listen to us on iTunes as well as right here on Blog Talk Radio if you happen to miss a show.
So can they listen on their phone?
On some phones they can. In fact, there's actually a couple Blog Talk hosts that have designed their own specialty apps for that.
Amazing.
The future.
We're everywhere.
We are everywhere. We're trying to be everywhere.
And it's working, I think.
It is working. I mean, it's working so good, we're actually getting sponsors.
It's amazing how everybody can be so in touch for everywhere. The only thing I don't like about all of this stuff is they're trying to do it all with pictures, and pictures on a 2.5-inch phone screen, and I just don't get along well. 2.5, 3 inches. I need something a little bigger than that to be able to see. But then I'm old.
Well, yeah, but I mean they have this thing called a tablet, but it's a little harder to keep in your pocket.
Well, you know, I like those. I've been and looking at a couple of things, and they have a couple of them that are like 7 inches, and those are actually almost big enough to see and to do things with. And they've got a couple of them now that are like little netbooks, but they actually have the phones built into them as well, and they actually work very well.
Yeah, technology is quite amazing. I mean, just like the Kindle, which is like the little notepad that they have on Star Trek.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how Star Trek stuff is becoming real?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, some people think that Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, was from another planet anyways, but that's where he got a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you're talking about the Kindle becoming real and the Kindle becoming very popular. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but Borders, the book company, is going out of business because of the Kindle.
Yeah. Well, just like Blockbuster and Hollywood Video, thanks to the Redbox.
The Redbox?
Yeah, those in front of the 7-Elevens and Walgreens, there's these red boxes where you can rent movies for a dollar.
Hmm.
They're really kind of convenient. You can reserve your movie online, and when you get out there, just plop your card in there, and it go ahead and puts the movies out. You can return them at any Redbox, and it's really kind of cool. You know, we use it.
Yeah, between all of those things, things are changing in this world, I tell you. You can download things. You can watch them on the television. My next step is to get a television that hooks up to my big screen so that I can actually watch things on the computer on the big screen. My television has a monitor hookup on it, but it's too far away from my computer to watch it, so I got to get another small computer that I can hook up to it.
Yeah, and in fact, I do have a public blast against Redbox, though I did want to throw out there. As you know, my background, you know, with electronics and robotics, they won't hire me to work on those machines.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they say I'm not qualified.
Well, maybe, hopefully they're reliable enough they don't need much.
Yeah, they're just a simple delivery system, but whatever. Anyway, like I said earlier, we have a sponsor to the show, and they've been with us for the last couple of weeks now. Actually, they've been with us for quite a while, but you know, we finally got an audio ad for them. And that's a local company started in town here. I actually know the owner, and what they do is that they make dog cookies, and they're really kind of cool looking. They're all natural, and they make them by hand in these really neat shapes like pancakes and other designs, and they use all recycled packaging, and
what is the shape of a pancake? It's just a round blob.
Well, it's like a waffle with a.
Oh, okay.
But anyways, you know, try them out. Here's the ad.
Good dog, Skippy. Yes, Skippy is a very good dog, and I always enjoy working with him and like to reward him for a great performance. However, I am always hesitant and very selective in the types of treats that I will give him because I worry about his health and only want to give him something that's really good for him. That's why I always reward him with Dancing Dog cookies, because they are handmade to order from all natural ingredients and preservative-free. Plus, they come in a wide variety of styles and flavors. Skippy loves them, and I'm sure you will too, so check them out at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
Yeah, check them out, www.dancingdogcookies.com, and if you would like to also sponsor our show, well, we'll take your money.
I'm all for that. Yeah, if you'd like to donate, we'll take it that way too.
That's right. For more information, email us talk@krbnradio.com or check on our website, krbnradio.com. And there's also a link to Dancing Dog Cookies there. That'll take you right to it. So, I have an interesting news headline I'd kind of like to share with you before we get on to our main topic.
And that?
Well, this is kind of interesting. I mean, it almost qualifies for the what the heck are they thinking segment, but this is kind of more the if I had something set up for odd and unusual. Headline, this is from Australia. Thieves steal 21 tons of mustard and ketchup.
21 tons of... What was this, McDonald's?
No. The loot was in a semi-trailer parked in a lot over the weekend in Vienna. Police think that the thieves are mainly more interested in the trailer than they were in the contents. But you never know. It could have been a rival restaurant, fast food restaurant, wanting to get some supplies.
Well, that's the thing. Even if it wasn't, if they're smart, they'll go find somebody and sell the 21 tons of stuff to them. You know, sell it really, really cheap and have them take it out of the trailer. I assume it's in little packages. I mean,
yeah, I didn't say, but I can just imagine them trying to pawn it off. You know, hey, buddy, want some mustard?
Yeah, that's going to take a lot of trips to town with mustard under your overcoat.
Exactly.
21 tons, Lord.
Maybe they'll hook up with a hot dog house. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. Even if you aren't one, if you stole 21 tons of mustard and ketchup, it'd be smart to open a hot dog house or a hamburger joint or something that uses mustard and ketchup, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I just see them. Can you identify the stolen goods?
Yeah, it's red and yellow.
Red and yellow.
It's interesting because I was on my way to town the other day. We were in the car on the freeway, and a big truck that looked like it was probably carrying gasoline. I don't know whether it was or not, because it actually was silver, all silver. It didn't have any printing on it at all. But I was thinking about that. You know, how long would that much gasoline? Because it's just a double trailer thing. It had an awful lot of gasoline. I was just wondering how long that much gasoline would go in my car. You know. I can't imagine. I mean, how much do one of those trucks hold? I wonder. That's an awful lot of gasoline.
Well, the tanker that I pulled was 120 barrels of water.
120 barrels, but how much is that as far as gallons?
Well, it's 42 gallons per barrel.
42,
120. Yeah, 42 or 44.
Mm. That's you know, does gasoline last forever? I mean. If you had it in there, and if you had one of those trucks full of gasoline, it'd probably go bad before you could even use it all.
No, I think it. Yeah, I think you're right. It's not like diesel where it's got a pretty long shelf life.
I don't know. I have no idea. I've never had gasoline last long enough to test that part out. It always goes through my car real fast.
Yeah, and whenever I go get mine, I got to go take out a loan. You know. You got the several types of pumps at the station. You know, you got the regular, your premium, and apply here.
Yeah, really. Well, that's another thing. I wonder, one of these trucks, do they all have one kind of gasoline, or what do you know? Do those tanks have divisions in them so you can have different kinds of gasoline in one tanker?
Yeah, mine was a double belly, so it had two different compartments in it, but some can have three and four.
Oh, okay. So then you have to figure out which one you want to use.
Well, yeah, and hopefully you hook up the right valve.
You know, I suppose that the people who are driving the trucks know what's going on, but it doesn't say anything on the side of the truck, so I wouldn't have any. I wouldn't know what kind of gas it is or not. And I'm kind of picky as to what kind of gas we put in our car.
Yeah, so am I. It has to be cheap.
Yeah, that's about as picky as we are, too.
because I'm like our current head of the nation, who thinks that 80% of the people are in favor for giving them more money and increase in taxes. I, for one, am not, because I'm poor. I want to keep as much money as I can get, because I like to eat.
That's true. Well, you know, I was watching the president on the television yesterday, and he was talking about cutting your income tax down so that you get to keep a little bit more of it than you had before. So if he's going to be lowering the taxes on individuals, he's got to be raising it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's a problem I have. You know, the problem is he talks about all of these things, but he never gives you any specifics. He never gives you any numbers. He never tells you how much he's going to lower anything, or what it's going to end up being when he's through, or where he's, you know, exactly where he's going to lower it or where he's going to raise it. But anytime you hear the president talking, you know good and well that there's going to be money extracted from you somewhere along the line.
Well, and a question I have to throw out there, and if anybody has an answer to this, 646-721-9887. See, I'll just slip that phone number right in there.
Very good.
Is at what point, this goes for both federal and local governments, at what point does the government actually become too expensive?
Oh, well, that's long past, as a matter of fact. Because the current government, being the Democratic end of things, and they are controlling the House they're controlling the White House and the Senate, they keep adding to it and making the government bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're trying to control way too many things at this particular point. They're adding things that they're letting you do and not letting you do. It just gets way too controlling, and it costs money to control what you do. And so they take your money to control what you do. And so you get hit from both ends. And it's a little annoying to me. The whole thing is this line of credit that we've got, this debt ceiling that they're talking about, that's got to change. You know, they talk about the fact that our debt ceiling went up while President Bush was in office, but it's gone up by double that just in the two years that Obama has been in office. And that's ridiculous. We're at $14 trillion at the moment, and it's not even possible to even conceive of that kind of money. And the only thing that you can think of and conceive of is when the government sits around and says, "Oh, well, it's only $500 billion. It's no big thing." Well, in comparison to $14 trillion, it's not a big thing. But in comparison to $25,000, $35,000, $45,000 a year that we make, it is a big thing. Sorry.
And Bradley, you have your hand up, and I'm assuming that doesn't mean you have to go to the bathroom.
No, I don't. I don't think it's going to get any less, no matter what they do.
Oh well, I do. I mean, they've got to stop spending. The one bill that just passed the House, and I don't know if it'll get anywhere else because the president has already said he's going to veto it, but that stops the spending. And if you stop spending and cap it at a certain point, like at 2008 when Obama came into office, if you cap it at that, you can control what's going on. But at the moment, you're right, because we're spending $120 million a day more than we take in. It's $120 billion more each month than what we actually take in.
Yeah.
So we've got to do a limit to that, and it's not just us, the federal government, the states, a lot of them were doing that as well. I was just talking to Robin before the show. I was watching a thing on television the other day, and I don't remember which state he's from, but one of the states, the governor is only elected for one term, and he's just a one-term governor. This governor has actually gone in, since he doesn't have to worry about being reelected, doesn't have to worry about going out and raising money for his next election, because he's not going to have one. He has actually taken the hard road, and he has adjusted things in his state to the point that his state is actually solvent. He actually has a $300 million surplus, which isn't very much when you're talking about a whole state, but any surplus is better than no surplus. And so, consequently, he has turned his entire state around. Now, again, he doesn't have to worry about being reelected. So, not everybody loves him, or while he was doing it anyway, they didn't love him. I think as before he leaves, he's probably going to be very well liked because things are going to be stable in that state, and they're not in most of them.
Well, and speaking of stable and following the laws and stuff, isn't Congress and the House? I don't have the particulars in front of me, but aren't they like 270 days roughly over when they were supposed to have the budget bill put in place?
Well, the thing you got to consider is, do you realize that the Democrats have been in office for what now, two and some odd years,
uh-huh.
And they have never passed a budget. They have actually never submitted a real budget. They just go temporary to keep things going. And so, no, they're not over by 270 days. They're over by 2.5 years.
2.5 years. Well, I guess the point I'm making here is that, you know, we elected these representatives, to run our government for us, or, you know, to represent us. And right now we're scrambling at the last minute here because they're not doing their jobs.
That's exactly right. They're not doing their jobs, and the thing is, you take a look at what Obama is doing. He comes on television and says, "Well, I've suggested that we do this, and I propose that we do that," but he never gives specifics. He never actually tells you exactly what he's got in a bill or anything else. He just kind of puts it out there and makes vague references and assumes that we're going to accept what he says. And unfortunately, at this particular point, we've been so many times screwed by what he said that where nobody's going to accept it anymore. So he's got to come out and at least the Republicans have a couple of bills online that have specifics and with actual numbers, they just, I understood, passed one of them yesterday, as a matter of fact, through the House. Now, whether it's going to go anywhere else or not is another story, because the president has already vowed to veto it, because he doesn't. You see, if he says, well, if you come to the table and be ready to negotiate, but to the president, being ready to negotiate is only if you're ready to go his way. If you're ready to do it his way, that's negotiating. If you're not, you're not negotiating. And
that's kind of like if you don't play the game my way, I'm going to take my ball and go home.
Well, I wish he would, except that he's there until 2012. And that's that. You know, you were talking about we elected these people to do what they're supposed to do, and they aren't. So that's what I think is probably going to happen, is that in 2012 we're going to reelect or change. You know, we did a big change this last time, and you think that was a big one. I think it's going to be even bigger next time.
Well, hopefully.
I think it's going to be Republican next time.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's going to be a Republican. And the thing I liked about this, and see what you think, Bradley. Governor of this state. I can't remember what state it was, but the governor of this particular state is elected for only one term, and so he doesn't have to worry about raising money for his next election, or he doesn't have to worry about being reelected. He's got 4 years to do whatever it is he needs to do, and then get out. And I think
that's a great idea.
We need to come up with some sort of a bill that makes that nationwide.
Has it always been that way from the beginning of presidency?
Well,
the way
that,
it is now.
It was the way we have it now.
Yeah.
Basically, but see, the thing is, our laws and things are based on 100 years ago. And things have changed a lot in that 100 years. One of the things is the Electoral College. We need to get rid of the Electoral College, because the simple fact of the matter is we get people in there and they're supposed to vote the way their constituents vote, and they don't have to, and so they don't. And we've got to change this. We've got to get more of a direct vote. We can do that nowadays with the kind of electronic means that we have. And you know, even if it wasn't as electronic as it is now, newspapers can be seen all over the world, not just in the state that they're in.
Yeah.
And things have changed, huge changes, and we haven't done anything to reflect that, to speak of, and we've got to.
Well, and the way, like you said, with computers and everything, everybody can have their own PIN number, so to speak, and the database can, you know, tally up, but I agree with the Electoral College needs to go. In fact, in its history, if I remember my history properly, there was two times that the Electoral College put a president in office where the popular vote did not.
Right, exactly. And one of them wasn't that long ago. And that's the thing that we've got to do. We've got to be a little bit more representative. I mean, even in the primaries, you know, the idea of having to vote Republican or Democrat in a primary and not being able to vote independent or whatever you want in a primary, that's ridiculous. We've got to change this so that we can vote whatever our conscience says, not what only vote our conscience only in certain ways.
Maybe that would make it more across the board, too, because, you know, at the beginning of the primaries, there's, you know, half a dozen candidates on each side, and by the time we on the West Coast get a chance, we're down to, you know, scraps, as I want to call it, table scraps, because we really don't have anybody left to make it worth going out and voting for them on the primaries. And
exactly.
So it'd make it a lot cheaper, I think. It would give us more of a choice, because half the time, you know, you're voting for the lesser of the two evils. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why Obama got elected, because we didn't want Hillary Clinton. I mean, come on, it's just she's Hillary.
particular point, she may have been better than what we got, though.
Yeah, it could be, but we didn't want any more of the Bush era, and that was the thing about McCain, because, you know, he was just another Bush addict, and a lot of us felt that. The presidency should not be a family tradition. But I guess Jeb wasn't interested in running anyways. But
he is now.
He is now. Great.
He's no longer the governor of Florida, so he can he can now be president.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to the point that I made, that I really would like to see everyone have a 4-year term, and that's it. 1 4-year term.
Simple. I think more people would get in and vote if it was that way.
Well, you know, it's we need to have more people have a chance of you know. I also believe that if a certain person is nominated, if I go out and nominate Robin for president, and I gather 200,000 votes or signatures or whatever you want to call it to nominate her for president, she has to run.
Yeah.
To serve her time.
And speaking of, I wanted to officially announce my candidacy as president of the United States. Actually, there is a guy in Eugene that is announced his candidacy for president, and you probably won't read anything about it because he's from Eugene. And that brings up the other issue, just how an individual, unless you're a millionaire, you know, there's some good people out there that would really do good in that position, but they just don't have the financial whereabouts to get elected.
Well, yeah, it shouldn't be that way.
Looks to me,
be based on money.
Well, what can you base it on? I mean, you have to be able to pay the advertising costs to let everybody know who you are, and if nobody knows who you are, you're not going to get elected.
Well, apparently we don't have any money left. We're $14 trillion dollars in debt.
Exactly. And even if they do, getting back to the budget here real quick, and folks, we will get into our main topic here in a few minutes. Even if they go ahead and temporarily raise the debt ceiling, what's going to prevent this from happening again?
Well,
I mean, we don't have any checks and balances in the system per se.
Well, that's the thing. If you look at this bill that the Republicans have put together, there are some checks and balances, and they do require a balanced budget.
It's like they're talking about doing a fail-safe measure to give the president the power to raise the budget limit. And that's like going through a car dealer negotiation where you're trying to buy a car and trying to get the price down as much as possible. Then you finally, because you're not getting anywhere, you finally tell the dealer, okay, well, you know, if we can't come to an agreement, I'll go ahead and let you name the price.
Yeah.
Except that particular bill I don't think was even actually legitimate, and I don't think it's going to go through or and even be submitted. The bill that I'm talking about is the different bill that the Republicans have been proffering for quite some time now. And it requires three positions. You know, basically it requires a balanced budget. It requires a limit. And this would be the last time we can do the debt ceiling, raise the debt ceiling. And it puts regulations on things, and that's why the president doesn't like it. He wants to be able to do anything he wants to do, and this president has spent more money than like the last 10 presidents combined. I mean, it's ridiculous at how much money, trillions of dollars, trillion dollars is a normal thing out of his mouth rather than millions or billions.
Yeah.
Well, I guess rattles my cage. We have to live within our means. I mean, we as the, you know, we're the government employers. You know, I can't go to my credit card company and say, you know what, I think that I want a higher debt limit because I want to go buy a whole bunch of stuff I can't afford to pay, and I'm going to tell you to go ahead and do it.
And people do that, though. They did in the past. Lately, it's becoming significantly harder to do, but that is the problem. Even the individual human or citizen in the United States has lived way over their limits, way above their means, with credit cards and things.
But how do we get the government to I mean, you can go on to – there's tons of websites out there that can give you a list of oddities that the government spends money on. I mean, locally here, we got the EMX bus project. And the stimulus package, we had I forget the dollar amount, but the study for the migration of snails. There was also one recently, I don't have it in front of me, but they're talking about it on the talk shows, about a 3-year study I guess is like $3.7 million on the size of penises that gay people have and how it affects them emotionally.
I heard about that.
Brother.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, with all the government waste, I mean, I would think those two things right there would be right on top of the list. I mean, sure, it may just be like 3 million or whatever, but 3 million plus 3 million plus 3 million plus 3 million, it adds up.
Yeah, sooner or later it does. The thing is, even more to the point is, you're talking about the 3 million and 3 million and 3 million. Let's go to how much money we're giving away to different countries, because we're talking in billions instead of millions. Like Egypt, we're giving $2.3 billion a year to Egypt. We're giving, actually it's $3 billion. We're giving $2 billion to the different countries. We're giving money to Afghanistan. We're giving money to Syria. We're giving money to Libya. And all of these, Egypt, including all of these, they're all over $1 billion. And that really adds up in a hurry. So if we were to take out, even if we were to take half of all of the money that we're giving to these countries, that wouldn't leave them without. But the point is, we don't even, here we are, we're bombing, you know, Libya or whatever it is, and giving them money at the same time as we're giving them money to do their war. And we don't even know who's making this war. I mean, we're not going over there and checking. We don't know who's going to war against these countries. Okay, we've been giving their government military aid and regular aid to the tune of billions of dollars, and then we give the rebels billions of dollars to fight against the government that we just gave the other billions of dollars. I mean, we're fighting against ourselves in these countries, and nobody's paying any attention to that. And something's got to stop.
Well, I think it all starts, like you said, spending within our limits. Starts with the personal citizens, then the cities, then the states, and then the federal government. But I don't think, you know, that's a tough thing to do, to start all over again.
Well, it may be tough, but it's, if we could just do it on our own rather than have it fail, and that's what's going to happen, is before very much longer, and I mean before very much longer at all. It's not going to take long at all before this all collapses, and we're going to have to start over, and that's going to really hurt.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a something for you. Have you heard of a phrase called a gang of six?
Yes.
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard about it.
Well, the Gang of Six just came up with another offer. That was the offer that the president put forward yesterday, and informs us that would be the one probably that he would accept if they wanted to pass that through the Senate. But again, it doesn't give any specifics, or at least he didn't give any specifics about it, and nobody on the air that I've heard talking about it, because it's been on the television for the last day and a half quite often. And nobody's making any real actual inroads as to what it literally says. So, again, it's another one of these things. And the Gang of Six, by the way, is somebody that was put into existence by the president, although it is equally Republicans and Democrats.
Right. The Gang of Six, led by Democrat Mark Warner and Republican Sexby Chambliss, including four other members of the National Commission on Financial Responsibility and Reform, which includes Democrat side, Mark Warmer, Dick Durbin, Kent Conrad on the Republican side, Saxby Chambliss, Mike Crapple, sorry, Mike, and Tom Colburn. It's like,
yeah.
Okay, what happened to the other members of the House and Congress?
Well, they were there, you know. I understand him picking six people and six Republicans and six Democrats to come up with suggestions and ideas. And then, of course, they come up with these suggestions, and then they have to be put before the entire House or Senate or both to get passed before anything happens. But again, that goes back to the old bit that the president says, you need to negotiate. You need to come to the table and be prepared to negotiate. But that only means if you're prepared to do what he wants. If you're not prepared to do what he wants, you're not negotiating.
Well, speaking of negotiating and doing what we want, I want you to give us a call, 646-721-9887, or join us in the chat room right now, this instant. If you wait till the archives, it's too late.
If you're going to wait for the archives, you have to do it by email and ask us questions by email. And we're more than happy to answer them, and we're more than happy to go for any kind of a subject you want to talk about, but you need to let us know by some means. We've got lots of means available to you. You know, it could be just simple as picking up the telephone.
That's right. And
672-1-9887.
Yep, 646-721-9887. Brad, okay. You got that number down?
I do, almost.
Almost. It takes a few months to remember it. I wrote it down on a piece of paper that about a year ago, and it's still sitting here on the table. I've got the same piece of paper that I wrote it to. Down on.
Well, and what's embarrassing on my part, you know, I give this phone number out at least 5 or 6 times during the show, and I couldn't make the show one day, and I was going to call in to say hi, and then for the life of me, I could not remember the phone number.
I wouldn't be able to remember it if I didn't have it written down in front of me. But then I'm old, so that's the difference. See, I shouldn't have to remember things. I'm really old.
Yeah, there's... Yeah, people are worshiping you because you're so old.
Yeah.
Close. Really?
Anyways, kind of along with the main theme today, have you guys heard of a thing, and this is not the movie, it's called Fast and Furious.
I have heard of Fast and Furious, and it is not the movie. It is a totally different thing. I've been looking into that and looking up things about what Fast and Furious means. I was not aware of what straw something or other, but it's people who buy something for someone else. In other words, if I didn't have the money to buy a car, I could have you buy the car for me, and then I would just make the payments and I get the car. But then if I default and don't make the payments on the car, you're stuck with it. But they're doing that with the actual weapons. They're doing this with different weapons, and when that happens, then of course that means that somebody who can't buy a gun goes out and talks to somebody else and says, "Will you buy the gun for me?" And so that means you buy the gun, which is now it's actually a felony. To do this, because you can't buy a gun for somebody else, because that means you're qualified to buy the gun, and you're giving it to somebody else who may not be qualified to have the gun. And regardless of whether he pays for it or not, and in this particular case, it's not a matter of if he pays for it, because he may go out and use that gun to shoot someone. And in this particular case, that's what's happening. They're going out and using those guns to shoot lots and lots and lots of people, and that's a problem.
Well, just so our listeners... No, if they don't, the whole idea is to monitor the illegal purchases from the federally licensed U.S. gun shops and then allow buyers, illicit buyers, to walk away, and that would give the agents the opportunity to learn how the guns are smuggled across the border, but that certainly is not how it ended up being.
Exactly. The word you're looking for, Cliff, is straw buyers.
Straw buyers, yeah. And that's the problem. The agents lost the guns. They lost the people. They didn't follow them close enough.
And the conspiracy of it was that in order to kind of gain outrage and introduce more gun control legislation, the ATF put these guns out there, hoping that the gun runners and drug traffickers would... grab a hold, and they can track them back to Mexico and see where the guns go. But the plan kind of backfired on them, especially when somebody got killed.
Especially, and it was ATF people and federal people that got killed with their own guns.
Right.
Speak.
And not to mention the fact that when Mexico found out about it, they weren't too happy about it either.
Well, can you imagine? Yeah, the federal government in the country next to you is selling bad people guns.
Oh, yeah. And the end result is, according to like this one article I'm reading from Fox News, thousands of man hours and millions of dollars spent, and only 20 suspects remain behind bars. Most were released within 24 hours of their arrest, and in the end, prosecutors, all prosecutors got was one middleman and a handful of straw buyers.
But from what a lot
of them are like 18, 20-year-old girls.
They're kids that are doing it. I mean, this is the end thing, the straw buying thing. You know, this is the quick way to make some money. I go out there and I need some money, so I go buy a couple of guns. And these guys are paying $200 per gun. So if I go buy three or four guns and take them out there, I've made some money. And so consequently, everybody is doing it. I mean, it's a real possibility that anybody could do it, and anybody would like to try it. It's a quick way to make some easy bucks, and kids are doing it. And that's not who we're supposed to be going after, is kids. We were supposed to be going after the criminals, and the criminals are on the end of buying, the last end of buying, and we don't even know who they are.
Yeah, and again, from Fox News, a straw buyer is usually a kid who is between 18 and 25. Those kids purchased more than 1,800 guns from stores in and around Phoenix. The straw buyers reportedly received about $100 per transaction. The gun stores say that they were assured by the ATF and U.S. Attorney's Office that the weapons would be tracked. Instead, agents say the weapons were allowed to walk.
Yeah, that's the sad part. Our government does, you know, it sounded on the real basis of the thing, it sounded really stupid, the whole idea, but they assured us that it wasn't stupid, that it would be fine, and that they'd be able to control it, and it turns out that it was indeed stupid, but they just kept doing it, and so these were guns that were taken away from criminals in the first place and then resold in a lot of instances. So we're recycling guns that weren't supposed to go anywhere in the first place, and then we lost control of them and lost track of them. And, you know, that, in my opinion, a whole lot of people should lose their jobs.
Well, of course, the head of the ATF, Kenneth Melson, says he didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So I don't believe.
Well, I don't think he would come right out and admit it, but I'm quite sure that he knew what his agents were doing.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I mean, that's just, this is just one of the things that just happened to come out in public. But, you know, what are the things that are not coming out, you know, behind the scenes stuff?
Yeah, how many more of this was going on that we didn't hear about? I mean, we're talking about AK-47s. I mean, we're talking about nasty guns and things that, in my opinion, shouldn't be sold in the first place. So, I mean, those are supposed to be military weapons and not something that, you know, people have and go out there and, you know, use to protect themselves.
Yeah, it was a U.S. AK-47 that was linked to the Mexican attorney's death.
Yeah.
And why would anybody have an AK-47? First of all, an AK-47 shoots, what, 160 bullets a second or something like that? How do you even keep enough money to buy enough bullets to put in the damn thing? My God, you go out there and pull the trigger for 1 second and you've gone through as many bullets as you can carry in your pocket.
Yeah, but somehow I don't think that over there across the border in a drug cartel that, hey, Ahmed, I think we're running low on our budget for bullets. You guys are shooting too much. You got to stop killing people.
Right, really. But more to the point of running too low on money for bullets, where do you put them? I mean, you've got to have 1,000 bullets for each weapon, and you got to carry these around. 1,000 bullets is heavy. How do you carry that around with you when you're going out to do whatever it is you're going to do, it, whether it's good or bad or indifferent? It just sounds to me like it's really ridiculous.
Well, I think they put them in, like, trucks.
And the camels carry them.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is that the thing that gets to me is the fact that our government lost them, and I can, you know, I'm not really on the side of the Mexican government. A lot of instances they've put some constrictions on things that we can do and can't do, and I think they're making it more difficult than they should. But in this particular case, I'm on the side of Mexico because they have every reason to be absolutely outraged by this whole thing. And if this has been going on, and maybe they know the Mexican government, maybe they know more about what's been going on than we did, and maybe that's why they've been so unhappy about things that have been happening. And if that's the case, I don't blame them. I mean, this should never have happened. And like I say, there are lots of, you know, I sit around. I'm always one who says, that let's not talk about how things shouldn't be done. Let's figure out how they should be done. And this is, gets back to a combination of things, a combination of our budget and our military. We need to change our military strategy and bring home, if not all, but at least most of all of the troops that we have in different countries around the world, bring home the money, that $2.5 billion which they're giving each of these Arab countries, and $3 billion to Israel. We don't need to be giving all this money. Let's bring that money home. Maybe we can bring it down to $1 billion each, and instead of three. And that would give us billions and billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of troops to put on the border and control what's going on and do it properly. Because right now we aren't protecting our own borders. And it's not just that border. It's becoming both borders. And, you know, we need to watch the water sides of our country, too, because we don't do anything for that. I mean, we do some because we do have the ports and things like that. But people can come to the United States almost anywhere and get on with no problem at all, get into the country.
Well, and speaking of real quick here, I just want to touch on is, what if back to Fast and Furious, what if it was the opposite? What if the Mexicans ran that type of operation to get into our side of the border? I mean, you know, you would think that it would create a huge international incident, but as I'm doing my quick little research here, speaking of, in 2009, apparently, Eric Holder, the Department of Justice, admitted to an operation called Operation Gunrunner, which is Eric Holder told the Mexican government that it's kind of along the same line as Fast and Furious, and was told that it would succeed, and, of course, was overwhelmingly denied by the ATF ever having any knowledge of it. You know, insert the Mission Impossible theme.
So what's even more what's even worse about this whole thing is they've done it before.
Yeah.
This is not the first time.
And how many times have they done it and they didn't get caught?
Number of times.
So I wonder who's somebody's got to be making money on this. So we need to find out who. Because there's, you know, of course, in this particular case, we're kind of spreading the wealth around if you've got all these young people, 18 to 22 year olds out there making big bucks on it as well. That's kind of sad.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. But, you know, and that's just one of the controversies that kind of made the headlines. But like I say, what is the other stuff that, you know, that doesn't?
And it, by the way, this is, you know, Cuba is buying guns, and a lot of people are, it's not just Mexico, it's around everywhere else as well. And so obviously there are people in our government, the ATF or whoever, that are doing this a lot, and we've been totally in the dark about it. So it's about time we spend some time, you know, investigating something like this and doing something about it. But again, that's back to, we've got to bring our people home and to bring the money home and make the people available and the facilities available and money available to control what's going on in our own country. Because obviously it's out of control, and we don't even know about it.
Exactly.
Well, and that gets right back down to, you know, the budget and its funding and everything like that is, you know, our government has gotten, with so many departments, so much going on, it's really have gotten too big for itself to, for the people to have oversight on it.
Well, now, and that's the problem. The government is so big, and it's going to get bigger and bigger with the Democrats and they're controlling things, and we're not going to have any control over what goes on, and it's going to be more and more control over every little things that we do, and you know how we, you know, they're going to control how many kids we have and when we have them and where, and things like that. We're going to get worse than China because, you know, at least they come out and do it legitimately and tell everybody why they're doing it. We're just doing it because we can.
Well, and here's one for you, kind of off the Fast and Furious thing. It's a headline. This story came out of Lawrence County, Pennsylvania. A woman had her son taken 3 days after giving birth for testing positive for heroin after eating a salad topped with poppy seeds.
Yeah, yeah.
It took 45 days to get her child back.
Yeah, we do spend an awful lot of time taking kids away from their parents.
Yeah, but for poppy seeds? Come on.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had experience with kids being taken from their parents or where they were going to. And in one case, for example, this lady who had a son who was, I think he was 8 years old or something like that, and he went across the street and he wasn't supposed to, and he knew he wasn't supposed to. And so she went across the street. She broke a twig off of a tree and started smacking him on his legs and on the way home. You know, you get home. I told you not to go here. And one of the neighbors called the police, and they took the kid away from her. And
oh, brother.
Just ridiculous. She got him back again, but she had to go through all of this in order to do it. And she was just trying to save his life, for God's sakes. And we get too carried away about things like this and don't pay any attention. I mean, they act first and then do, especially when it's kids. They act first, they take the kid away, and then they decide whether or not it should have been done or not. And that's not, you know, you're guilty until proven innocent in this case.
Well, yeah, they're even talking about taking children away and putting them in foster parents if they're obese.
Yeah, yeah. That's another story. That's getting absolutely absurd, this obesity thing. That's, you know, it's been, well, you know, they keep telling us how much money this is costing us because we're all overweight. It isn't costing us anything. We're paying for it. It's not costing the government anything. And it's not, you know, if I'm not overweight and you are, it costs you money, not me.
Well, let me throw this out to you. For those of us that are over 40 that remember this, back when you could buy candy for a penny.
Yeah.
For a dollar, that's a heck of a lot of pennies or candies. But we didn't have any problem with obesity back then. We're all sugared up. I mean,
well, you know, the thing that gets to me is I don't see much difference now between now and then. I mean, people are just as fat now as they were then, or just as fat then as they are now, but maybe not. But the difference was that we had more things that had to do with exercise. You know, if you want to go back 100 years, everybody had to work on the farm. Everybody had to do something. And so we didn't get so fat. We weren't just sitting on our dead butts as often. And but there's so many things that changed it over the years. Again, our laws and our regulations don't keep up with the actual technology and what's going on in our lives. And we need to spend more time worrying about equating our rules and regulations with who and what we are.
Well,
you know, the kids sit around and play video games all day.
Well, what else can they do? I mean, a lot of schools have taken away playground equipment for fear of being sued.
Well, not only that, but you can't go out and have a kid work. You can't put a kid to work. You can't pick strawberries or raspberries or any of that kind of stuff until they're an adult. And that was what the kids did for exercise in the summer times and at various times as they worked. And now you can't do that. So, you know, we've regulated our kids into fatness, and then we're going to regulate our adults into doing something about it, and you can't legislate morality. I'm sorry, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, it's so hard for parents to make a living nowadays that they can't stay home with their kids and do things with them. They got to go out and have three or four jobs, and it's just a really tough thing.
Well, in addition to that, as far as having control over your kids per se, in Texas, for example. Relying on my feeble memory, they passed a law that if your child, say, steals something, the parent can go to prison for that. But yet, the parents are not allowed to discipline their children or have control over them. And in the schools, they teach the kids that, you know, if your parent is abusing you or touching you where you shouldn't be, to, you know, call this abuse number. And some of the kids are using that to control their parents. You know, if you you know, if you don't let me stay up, I'm going to call this number and accuse you of being abused. So the parents have no control over the kids, but yet they're responsible for the kids' action.
A lot of kids are doing that. I've had kids do that. I've taken foster kids, and I know of kids who have done that in the past. They didn't get away with it with me, but they did it with their parents. Because a lot of kids are, you know, kids are not stupid. That's all they have to do in life is learn how to control their parents. And so the parents have to not only learn how to control their kids, but they have to make a living too. The kids only have to control their parents. So they have a lot more time to work on that than the parents do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, who wants to have kids these days?
Well, you know, that's the thing. Like you say, that is the dichotomy of things. You can't control your kids, but you're responsible for it if you don't control your kids. And so, that was the story of the switch and smacking the kid's legs. She's trying to control the child to keep him safe, and yet we're locking her up or him up or something. She didn't lock her up. They took the kid away from her. But, you know, you can't win in this game. And as long as you keep trying to legislate these things, you're not going to be able to win. And the government, you can't let the government do this. That's why, again, we got to get back to the business of starting at home. Because, you know, one of the biggest problems we have right now about our pay, you know, why everybody has to work. Mom and dad both have to keep a job so that they can just keep money or keep food on the table. Well, that's not really true. We're always trying to live up to the next door neighbors and live up to the Joneses. And so we're trying to get more and more of this and more of that. If we were able to sit down and just get by with what we need, it would be easier. And plus the fact right now our wages, the amount of money that the people make, whether it be unions that are creating a problem or not, the point is our wages in the United States are out of control. We want to make more and more and more money, but what that's doing is putting us out of contention anywhere in the world. We can't compete in the world with what we make or what we do because we're paying so much more to get what we make and what we do. So consequently, you can go anywhere and hire people for less money almost than you can in the United States. There are very few places that the standard of living is as high as it is in the United States. So we're going to have a little bit of control over our standard of living, which is happening right now, by the way, where the wages in the United States have gone down by almost 30% in the last 2 years or 3 years or whatever it's been. And it's going to have to go down a lot further than that because other countries are making a fraction of what we're making. They're manufacturing things for a fraction of what it costs us to manufacture things. So the United States has priced itself clear out of contention in most places in the world. So it's going to have to equalize out somewhere along the line.
Well, I totally agree with you on that one. And that's one of the reasons I'm so much against for, you know, raising taxes and really hoping that they get their act together up there in D.C. I mean, when you look at locally, I mean, down here in the peasant land, shall I say, the actual individual citizen, you know, you try to rent an apartment. Now, you're spending $700-$800 a month just to rent an apartment. And if you're making a minimum wage to $13 an hour job, that's half or three quarters of your paycheck, assuming you're even lucky to have a paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, and they that's why it just frosts my cookie so much. You know, we're talking about conspiracies and how the federal government doesn't have money to fund X, Y, Z, and they want to cut funding to Social Security, Medicare, and things that directly affect us. That's why I get so upset about, like, some art project, like $90,000 in Springfield, for example, for a funnel. All it is a large metal funnel, doesn't do anything but stand there. Okay, great. Yeah, it kind of looks, well, looks like modern art. But couldn't we live without that funnel for a while until the economy gets better, then do some purdying up, you know, put that $90,000 into, oh, I don't know, how about the Lane County Sheriff's Department, which got its budget cut, and now there's only 20 hours available to patrol the whole county.
Yeah, no jail space.
You know, things like that, which I think is the primary responsibility of the government, is the protection of its citizens.
I'm being conspicuously quiet because you keep bringing up these art subjects and these art projects, and the amount of money that's involved is so minuscule as to not really make any difference. $90,000 won't even pay one officer's paycheck.
Well, $90,000 may not, but take $90,000 times 100.
But there were 100. See, in my opinion, all of this art stuff and all of this should be cut off. There should be no federal funds or state funds or involved in that. It should be if we want the art, if the American people want the art, then the American people will pay for the art. In which case, the cities or whoever is commissioning that to be done needs to put it up to the public to pay for it. And if the public doesn't want to pay for it, then we shouldn't have it, because obviously the public doesn't care about it. And if the public doesn't care about it, why are we doing it? And so, you know.
Well, I agree with you, but I'm just using art as an example of the differences between what is necessary versus what isn't necessary.
I agree with that, and I think it should be carried over to bike paths and all this kind of stuff, because, you know, if the people that ride bicycles want to do something about it, then fine, let them pay for it. But if they're not going to pay for it, then we shouldn't have these bike paths and all this stuff that we're doing. We're putting bike path places, we're slowing traffic on places because the people walking or biking need to go across the roads, and we need to have the special signals and things for them to cross the roads, and on and on and on. All of this kind of stuff. If people want to do this, then people will pay for it. And I'm sorry, but I'm afraid the same thing happens with the parks. I mean, we are finally getting to the point that the parks are being charging for money for doing the similar things, and that's fine. If you want to be a person who goes to a park, then you need to pay a fee, and that fee should be enough to maintain that park. If it's not enough to maintain that park, then the park needs to be made smaller or be eliminated, because nobody wants to go there.
I still think we all need a giant funnel.
Well, maybe we need to drop you through that funnel.
Oh, there's the visual.
I don't know, and it boils down to money. I mean, again, back to this business of one term presidents and senators and everybody else. Mitt Romney just announced that he raised $18.25 million to run for president. $18.25 million. That was just in a month, by the way. Excuse me, 3 months. It was in 3 months. He raised that. Who else we've got here? Bachman hasn't given her money. Ron Paul raised $4.5 million in the second quarter. Tim Pawlenty, $4.2 million. Utah Governor John Huntsman, $4.1 million in just a matter of a few weeks. We're raising all this huge amounts of money to do these things. Even the Godfather's Pizza P guy, Herman Cain, raised $2.5 million in the last quarter. Newt Gingrich is probably the smallest one. He raised $2 million. But, you know, he has money, but he's probably the least amount of money. The point is, we're making these huge roads into how much money, and we already know that I think President Obama was something like $85 million or some huge amount of money. But then he's got the office of president that he can use, and that should be against the rules too. But we've got to stop doing that. If none of these people were going to run more than
one term.
Couldn't think of the word. If they're all going to run one term, they're not going to raise that kind of money to do that. It's too expensive. And so consequently, we wouldn't have that much money, and we'd be getting the same elections because the people somebody would be running. The thing is, they wouldn't be spending that kind of money on it. And we need to use that money somewhere else. That's a huge amount of money. We're talking $100 million just for these people to run for office. That $100 million could buy lots of funnels.
Well, and to throw this out, they're raising all this money without raising taxes and fees. Why can't they do that for the government?
Well, you know, that's, again, I don't think we need to taxes and fees. I think we just need to control how much money we spend. There is a point where we have to pay for government, and I know that. And there are some instances where the government, federal government, needs to be doing things. Federal government needs to be the one who controls the federal highways. Nobody's, you know, well, who else is going to rebuild the I-5 or some of the federal freeways and things like that? And they need to be maintained. But so there needs to be money there in the federal government for something. But there's an awful lot of things we don't need it for. The border with, each border, both borders need to be controlled. That's something the federal government needs to take care of, not individual states, because that's putting too much emphasis on and too much of a problem for, you know, individual states. We'd have four states protecting 38 states or whatever it is, and we don't want to do that. So there needs to be a federal government, but it doesn't need to be doing nearly as much as it's doing. And the tax code doesn't need to be 42,000 pages long. I mean, the tax code could be one page long and still accomplish actually more than it's doing now. It would eliminate all of the loopholes, because there wouldn't be any loopholes if you only had one page to talk about them. And so if everybody only paid 4% taxes, and everybody had to pay the 4% taxes, including GE and all of these other people, I mean, 4% from GE would be a huge amount of money that we didn't have before. And so why aren't we doing something like that instead of messing around with adding more to all these things?
Well, and you bring up a good point. What is the role of the federal government?
Well,
good point.
A lot more than that, than our forefathers intended it to be, I think.
I mean, I don't think it's supposed to be out there for, well, I'm assuming that the main role is, of course, to protect you know, country and welfare and whatever, but not to be out there handing out a bunch of goodies to not, well.
Well, you know, you mentioned welfare. Welfare is a thing that I don't believe is something that we need to have. There are some instances, for example, Social Security. Everybody, I think, has decided that that's welfare. Social Security is not welfare. I paid into Social Security for a million years, it seems like. And so it's not something that the government is giving me. It's something that the government is paying back to me. I paid into it, and it should have, you know, earned interest over that period of time. If I had decided to put that money in a bank to earn interest, it would have earned interest, and I would be assured of getting it back. But by letting the government do it, which is what they originally said they were going to do over that, now they're changing their rules as we get down to the point of being able to get it back again. They've already, when I first started paying into that, the retirement age was 55. Now it's 65 and 72 and so on and so forth. You get less each time, and it makes it further away. And they're talking about making it much further than that later in time. So,
well, they're stealing from the people.
They're exactly what they're doing.
Exactly.
And in this particular case, it's something that we paid in. It was over and above taxes. I mean, the Social Security was a separate tax from income tax and all the rest of it. So I paid extra for this, and now it's being stolen from me. And I'm very upset about that.
Well, yeah, the Social Security was originally started from the Townsend Act, which was supposed to be the poor man's retirement. And, you know, they keep saying, oh, it's not going to be solvent, but they have borrowed, quote unquote, from Social Security for other projects.
Yeah, Social Security was solvent. And the problem is, and I understand, the problem is we're giving Social Security to an awful lot of younger people that are in terrible trouble and are in dire straits and need money. But this is not where it's supposed to come from, and so that's where the money is going. I took a foster kid in, and that was the reason he had money to pay for his care, was because they were paying me $634 a month from Social Security. Social Security was paying that, and I was not happy with that at the time. I accepted it because somebody had to take care of this kid, but that's not what Social Security was originally made for. I mean, Social Security was supposed to be there when I retire, and now that I've retired, they're playing around with it, and that's not the way it's supposed to be either. And they've cut it down to the point that you really can't live on Social Security. You have to have something else in here to do it, because it's such a small amount, a menial amount. And it wouldn't have to be that small if they just left it alone, let it do what it was supposed to do.
Exactly. Speaking of what they're supposed to do, we have 20 minutes remaining in the program. 646-721-9887 if you'd like to chime in on this or any other topic that is on your mind at the moment. Conspiracy theories is the main topic, but we have gotten a little bit more on the government debt, because it is one of the top topics in the news. But that's okay. It's okay to veer away from the main topic once in a while, whatever.
Government debt is what everybody's talking about right now, because it's about to default. I mean, August 2nd is the day. We've already decided they've decided to adjust that so that because we were talking about Social Security, they were going to not pay the Social Security tax. Well, they've decided to pay those checks this month. Now, whether they're going to do it next month or not, I don't know. But that's the problem that we have, is we do these little fixes. We don't do the main fixes. And you know, ready or not, that's what the Republican bill that was passed, I believe, yesterday. I think it was passed yesterday. But that's what it did. That made a way for years down the road of clearing the way to make everything work. But the president doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to accept the fact of fixing things in the future. He wants to be doing this month by month or 6 months or whatever. And this is what's destroying our entire economy right now. Nobody with a business is going to plan for the future if they don't know what the future is going to be like. And they don't know what the future is going to be like because they don't know what the president's going to do next week. And so that's why we've got to have a president who at least can make up his mind. A president who leads rather than he doesn't even follow. He just doesn't know what he wants to do.
Well, see, my stand, as we talked about off the air, I think we should go ahead and the Republicans should stick to their guns, and we should go ahead and default. And the reason why I say that, yeah, there's going to be, like we talked about, there's going to be some checks not mailed out. But what's already starting to happen, I forget what state that it was recently that couldn't balance their budget, and so they quote-unquote, closed the government down, and so that meant that public services that people took for granted, like the state parks, which weren't open because there wasn't anybody there to run them, I mean, people got upset. And so I'm thinking that let it go ahead and default, let it come out and hit the people, let people get upset for a change, like some that have joined and started and joined the Tea Party, and get people involved and tell our government, guys, it's time to quit the BS. It's time to start running our government like the way it should be.
Well, unfortunately, I think that's going to happen before too long, whether we like it or not. And at the rate that the president's going, except that I'm afraid the Republicans that you're talking about are going to cave, and they're going to, you know, pass something temporary, and we're going to keep on going down this road. But sooner or later, you're right, it's going to have to stop, and it's going to have to end. And when it does, then people are going to get upset. I you know, there are certain things that can't be touched, and I think Social Security should be one of those, because that was a guaranteed thing. That wasn't just something that people talked about and thought it would be a nice idea. That was a guarantee.
Well, then they raised the age, you know, 2 more years. You know, originally it was 65. Now it's up to, what, 67?
Originally it was 55.
Yeah.
When I started paying into this, it was 55 years old, and I thought I was going to retire at 55 years old. And, of course, long before I got to 55, they had raised it all the way to 65. And now, yes, you can retire at 65, but you don't get as much money as if you wait until you're 72. And then you don't get as much money as if you wait until you're 75. And it just keeps going higher and higher. And you're right. You know, they change the rules as we go along, and that's something you can't do. You've got, you know, that's what our country is supposed to be known for, is sticking to its guns, but we keep changing the guns.
Yeah, but it's all about money. Like, for example, their Congress is really worried now because Moody's has come out and said that if they don't have a debt ceiling, that U.S. government's going to lose their AAA credit rating.
See, and I think that's fine. I personally believe we should lose the AAA credit rating, because the simple fact is, if you don't have the money, you shouldn't have the credit. And if you keep having the credit, then you're going to keep borrowing the money, and then sooner or later it's all going to come to an end. This is goes way back. I said years ago, clear back when I was in high school, I was concerned because everybody is buying everything. You know, everybody in the country is spending more money than they have. Everybody is living on credit, not just the federal government, but every individual almost is living on credit. I've been one of those people, by the way, who never did. But, you know, I went without a lot of things because I didn't want to live on credit. But the simple fact is everybody else is doing it. And now we've got the federal government sitting there saying, you need to save money, but at the same time, you need to have, you know, use your credit cards. You can't have it both ways. You got to do one or the other. But that's the problem with our government, and that's the problem with the Democrats at this particular point that I can see, and is that they want you to have it both ways. And you can't have it both ways. You've got to have one or the other. And they aren't allowing either one.
Well, so, like if an individual, for example, defaults on their debts, you know, like declare bankruptcy or whatever. You know, like I say, the debt doesn't just go away. It just gets absorbed by the banks or whoever the creditor is. But if the nation goes into default, then much of the world, in addition to, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, much of the world is going to face this prospect of losing about $14 trillion. And they're saying that would be, you know, like the World Banks, for example, the China, who we borrowed money from, other countries that rely on us for aid, is, you know, those are not going to be there.
Well, you realize that a significant amount of that $14 trillion doesn't exist and never did. We just printed money to go to allow that to happen. In a lot of instances, we didn't even print the money. We just said it was there and spent it. We only owe a little over $1 trillion to China. And over a period of time, we could indeed pay that and would indeed pay that for the simple fact that if we didn't, China would do something about it. And there's many different scenarios of what they could do about it, and other countries as well. But yeah, right. It is true that if we were to default on all of this, it would affect the rest of the world. But the rest of the world is bumbling around and trying to figure out how to control things. They're in as much trouble as we are, and they're in the process of defaulting. And in different countries, Greece and Portugal and Spain and a few of these countries are having major problems, and a couple of them are borrowing money to try to get out of it. And they're realizing that they have to live within their budget. Greece is the one that's probably the most prominent in the news and being talked about, and the fact that the people in Greece are really upset because they're having to live within their budget, and they should have to live within their budget.
Oh.
So should we. We need to have this same problem, and we're not doing it. We're just borrowing more money. So we've got to do something about that borrowing more money business. And if it means defaulting and bankruptcy, then that's what we need to do.
Well, and I don't have the numbers before me, but even if they go ahead and say they can't, you know, August 2nd comes around, they haven't come to a resolution yet, the money that's coming into the government is not just going to suddenly stop. I mean, they still got a cash flow coming in. They can still make payments on some of their debts that they have. Yeah, they're going to have to cut back. Maybe that's going to force them. If that's what it takes to force them to cut some of the waste or relook at it. I mean, like a couple of years ago when I declared bankruptcy, I had to go through credit counseling, and we had to go through and show where our money's coming in, which wasn't much because I had a hard time getting a job at the time. Where the money's going, and they said, come up with a budget. How much are you paying on clothes? We'll give you $100. I don't pay $20 a month in clothes, you know, going along with their thing. But the point was that they forced us to take a look under a microscope of what are the money coming in, the money going out, and what can we actually live without.
See, that's the thing. We know that we're spending $120 billion a month more than we bring in revenues. So all we have to do is sit down and cut $120 billion a month from what we're spending. Now, that's not easy, but it is easy when you start looking at the fact that we're spending billions and billions of dollars, $120 billion a month. We could probably save half of that by just cutting in half all of the money that we give each year to the different countries around the world. that would take care of half of that, and then we'd have $60 billion a month to figure out how to save on. And if we saved that $120 billion a month and didn't spend more than we have, then we could worry about where to find the money, because that includes, that $120 billion a month includes paying the bills on the money that we've borrowed. So if we just simply cut back that $120 billion a month over a period of years, we'd be able to get totally out of this thing and do much better. But we've got to figure out, you know, that's the big thing, is this cap thing. We've got to have a balanced budget. We've got to make a balanced budget a part of the law, a part of the rules, a part of whatever you want to call it, so that we can't go over that amount of money. We can't spend more than we have coming in. And since we don't know exactly how much money we have coming in, we need to spend a little bit less than we think we have coming in, so that if something were to happen and that didn't happen, that money didn't come in, we aren't in too bad a shape. But the thing is, if you spend less money, it's amazing how much money, you know, if we leave more money in people's pockets, then they spend it and more money comes in. So it's a big dichotomy between the what one person says and the other. But the simple fact is, we need to look at what takes place. Go back and look in the past and see how it worked when we did this or did that, and do whatever one worked.
Well, maybe we should do like what Jesse Ventura suggested. Repeal the federal income tax and replace it with a national sales tax. And his theory is that under the current system, the government gets its money before you get your money. And so that doesn't really make them directly situated in the economy. But if you got rid of the federal income tax and had a federal sales tax, the government is directly related to the health of the economy. In other words, you get the money first, and if you're not buying anything, the government doesn't get any money. Instead of the other way around.
Well, I understand that a lot of people have talked about the VAT or NTS sales tax or whatever you want to call it. I don't think that's an acceptable or reliable way to make it work, because you don't know what you've got until you've got it, and so you can't spend anything until you've got it. You know, an income tax is fair, but it needs to be a fair income tax. We've got to get rid of these thousands and thousands of pages of loopholes. And that's what we're talking about now, is getting rid of the loopholes. If everybody was paying the same amount, and I'm talking about the same amount in a percentage, not the same amount of dollars, it would be fair, and we wouldn't have a problem. But we, for some reason or other, allow our elected officials to amend these things all the time to get what they want for what they want. And so, you know, there needs to be more.
Well, I think, and I kind of want to go elaborate on what a person in our chat room is talking about, is that and locally here, too, in the state of Oregon, when they do their budgets, they're assuming a perpetual or a steady flow of income. And like with Oregon's Measure 6667, which was supposed to be the cure-all, it was based on the current cash flow coming in from taxpayers. And once the 6667 got passed, they're kind of scratching their heads going, we're not getting the estimated income that we expected off this measure, and that's because so many people and businesses have left Oregon that the sources of revenue was no longer there. And so I think maybe that's what's going on with the federal government. They're just assuming that we have this steady stream coming in and we can tap it for more at any time. All we got to do is pass a bill or pass a tax or pass a fee or add more fees onto it. And the citizens' money tree, we can just go ahead, you know, and pluck more money off it.
That's exactly the same, the philosophy that we're talking about, is the fact that if you keep taking more money away, then people spend less money and you get less money. But if you were to simply stop taking more money away or give a little bit money, more money back, then people have more money to spend and more money comes into the government. And so, but nobody wants to sit back and look at what has happened in the past. If you look at what took place in the past when you did certain things and follow certain trends, you can figure out how to do it. But nobody wants to spend time looking at what they've done in the past and how it worked. I mean,
well, it's too easy to be self-serving. You're exactly right, and it's been proven in the past where tax rates and has been lowered. More money has been put into the hands of the people. Yeah, it, the government's not going to see the fruits of that in a short period of time, but over the long period of time, the government is actually going to get more tax revenue by lowering taxes than by increasing taxes.
That's why we have to put a cap on this thing. We have to make a balanced budget bill. We have to make it a law that the budget has to be balanced. And consequently, until we do that, nobody can be assured of what they're going to have or not have. Once we make that a law, and once we make that assurance that it has to be balanced, then we know that they can't do this or can't do that or can do this or can do that, and we have an idea of what we can actually bank on, and that's when people will start spending money and doing things. People who have lots of money will spend more money. People who don't have lots of money will actually spend more money. So
the IRS has way too much power.
Exactly. In 4 minutes remaining in the program, I want to throw this question out real quick. Has Obama or anybody there in the White House made any type of a offer to cut their pay?
Well, that's the other problem we have right now. I just heard the other day the saying bantied around that you have the job until you die. When you're in a government position, you've always got that job. You don't ever get fired. We've got to stop hiring. We've got way too many bureaucrats. We've got to start getting rid of some of the bureaucrats, and we've got to bring the government paychecks down to be equal what the rest of the world gets paid. Government employees make at least twice as much money, and in some cases, way more than that of the civilian workforce. And that's a problem that we have in our country. So everybody wants to be a government. We're going to have everybody working with the government, nobody working for them, anybody else. So we've got to change that too. And that's all a part of adjusting how the money is spent.
I agree. That's why I'm saying is just the government needs to be more in tune with the people.
That would be nice, yeah.
Yeah, that's why, okay, like I heard, what was it, Lars Larson yesterday was interviewing, I can't remember who the congressman was, but he brought up the point that, didn't you get the message, or the message that the people sent in 2010, doesn't that mean something to you? And the guy goes, what message was that?
Right. Well, he's going to find out, because I think in 2012 or whenever it is, we're going to have the next election. I think that's when it's going to happen, and we're going to change a lot of things. And unless something happens pretty radical, I think we're going to be changing a president at that time as well, in which case a lot of things, people are going to find out that they're being elected for a reason, and that reason is not just to go in there. But again, that gets back to the bureaucracy. You go in there. You don't know what's taking place, so you listen to the people that are in the position, the bureaucracy that are there all the time, that have been there for a long time, and so everything goes on business as usual. And so that's why the bureaucracy has to change either their opinions or their ideas or them, period.
Well, that's why I was saying is that my harp is having borrowing a little bit from Parliament, because right now under our current system, anybody can say anything to get into office. Once you're in the office, you don't have to worry. You can do anything you want to until it's time for re-election again. If you have a system in place where it's a lot easier to get rid of the person, I mean, the impeachment system takes too long of a process, if it even works at all, have a vote of no confidence. Give a chance where people that are elected have to be there. They have to do their job. If they're not, if once they're in and they turn on us, they're not doing their job, or they go against what they why we elected them there, we have a better method of firing them.
Well, I don't think that's a better method, because a vote of no confidence would have to go up to the people, and that takes a long time to put together a vote of the entire population, because that's what it would have to be. If it wasn't that, if we just had somebody in the government who voted, then we're back right where we are now. But if we just one term for everybody, then if they don't do what we want to do, then next time we don't we elect somebody new. But if we're going to elect somebody new anyway, it's about time that they start doing something that they're going to be held responsible for.
Exactly. Well, hopefully, in 2012 things will be a little bit better, but the main thing is we get involved and shows like this that let people express themselves is one of the ways of doing it. And speaking of, we'll be back next Wednesday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. Again, thank you to the people in our chat room and all the people that are listening live and on the archives. If you have any questions, comments, or topic suggestions, please email them to us at talk@krbnradio.com. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.